Hello and welcome to the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, where we listen to people's fairy encounters. But take heed, we're not talking about winged Tinkerbells here. These are real fairies, real encounters that took people like you and I by surprise. Stay a while and hear their stories. My name is Jo Hickey Hall, and I'm a folklore researcher. Dear listener, I hope you're well. We are drawing near to the winter holidays and, of course, towards winter solstice. Solstice means sun stands still, and for those few days around 21st of December, the sun appears to stop on its solar path. From that point onwards, the light will begin to return. But let's stay focused for now on that descent. In the last few years, I've begun to experience firsthand how powerful this point in the year can be as a time for ritual, magic, and in particular, speaking with ancestors and communing with the land itself. It is, of course, the darkest time of the year. For our ancestors, this time of year always posed the potential for death of loved ones, cattle, and of crop, where you needed to work as a community to protect the vulnerable. It was a time to retreat indoors together and share tales around the fire. And I speak of this because right now, during this time in the world, in December 2023, it very much feels like descent into deep shadow. We are witnessing relentless and needless death and destruction on a horrifying scale. The suffering feels too great for many of us to even bear witness, and yet if we allow ourselves to feel that sorrow and that grief, that sense of loss and hopelessness and rage, we may find that it calls us to remember that this has happened before many times in the name of progress by powerful groups who told themselves that they were acting with reason, rationality, and justification. It is leading me to reflect on our ancestors who were systematically divided from their land, their traditions, beliefs, and from each other. All the things that make us human, that bring us joy, that connect us and give us a sense of belonging. And so, if like me, you are really struggling with what we're witnessing, I feel there are things you can do. There might be practical things you can offer. Your time, your expertise, or showing solidarity in some way with those suffering. Helping people who are displaced or experiencing hardship in your own communities. This is much needed in the world too. But also, do not underestimate how infinitely useful it is at this time to speak with your ancestors. Make some time and space. Light a candle. Call upon them in some way through images, song, or anything that feels relevant and meaningful to you, and feel their presence no matter how fleeting or ambiguous. Allow your thinking self to drop back and instead feel. Your ancestors' experiences are in your DNA. Whether you knew anything about them or not, their ways of being flow through your body. At this time of great sorrow, it is a powerful act. When we were part of living communities with deeply held traditions that would help us through these times, ask your ancestors to guide you to your own truths and support you in your life and ways in which you can help others at this time. I really hope that's useful for some of you. Now, this episode is really a heartwarming story about a little boy who came face to face with a wintry sprite, which many of us might recognise or refer to as Jack Frost. As a figure, this character doesn't actually go very far back in history at all, although there have been other personifications of winter that have appeared in various cultures throughout history. I'll be talking a little more about that at the end, and I'll be offering some 19th century poetry by Hannah Flagg Gould, some old Irish weather wisdom from Ducas School's collection of the 1930s, and some comparable encounters where children see fairies through their window panes. Thanks so much to all the amazing folks who are supporting me on Patreon and will have received this release 1 week early. I am ever grateful for our community, which keeps this project going and enriches life, particularly in these difficult times. It cannot be overstated just how important it is to feel that sense of belonging with like-minded people. Whatever it is that you're into, there will be a group out there. Don't ever feel alone. In the bonus this time, I'm going to be reading a version of The Snow Child. It's an enchanting story about the innocence and magic of childhood. It used to be read to me as a child from the beautifully illustrated Hilda Boswell's Treasury of Favourites, published in 1972. Join us on Patreon for that and many more exclusive bonus episodes. I hope you enjoy this story, and a huge thanks to our guest, whose voice you may recognise from episode 69, Beckoned by Forest and Lake. I'll see you at the end.
Experience, and I wanted to share this with you, was I was probably 4 or 5, real young, and it was a real cold winter night. The wind was blowing, and I woke up to thumping on the window. It was like a wind hitting the window. Have you ever heard the wind hit the window pretty hard, but it makes like a thump, and it woke me up. And so I was looking at the window, and I saw a foggy orb kind of rotating around the window, like swirling fog. And I just kept staring at that. And then it formed into a face, a sprite-like face. And it was looking right at me. And I looked at it, and it smiled, and it made expressions. And you know, I was so young, I was just, you know, I did somewhere between reality and a total fantasy world. I would, obviously be terrified if someone put their face in front of my window. But at that age, it was completely just, I thought maybe I was looking at a TV set or something, just an image in the window. But I knew that it was really strange, and it was there for a period of time, and then it was gone. And the next morning when I woke up, that window in the bedroom had the most beautiful frost pattern on it. I mean, it was, the whole window was like a painting, and every other window in the house just had like a fog and some condensation on it. There was no other window in the house that had that pattern, and I knew that Jack Frost had come to my window that night and left this incredible fractal pattern of, and I haven't seen that in years. But you know, I tried to show my mom. I said, you know, look at this, and she was, you know, stunned. She was like, "What? That is really amazing, you know, because this frost pattern was so intricate." And you know, if you've ever looked at a snowflake or frost, it's just an endless like work of art, you know. So I thought it was some sort of elemental that came and got my attention, and thought, I guess, you know, it would be fun to interact with me, and then left that little miracle on the glass. And I went to every other room. Once I realized that window was the only one with the frost on it, I went to every other window in the house and, you know, and just verified that. And so that was another incredible memory.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, I'm drawn to tears listening to that, because that to me is, you know, is nature reaching out to this little boy. To this little soul that's so open, and how naturally connected we are with these energies. It's not unusual. It's not nonsense. It's very real and it's very normal. And, you know, I feel that that's much more normal than, I don't know, putting a uniform on a kid and sending them off to school. A child having that sort of experience when they're just feeling themselves as a little person in this world, when, you know, because kids, they tend to sort of see themselves through their parents' eyes until a certain age. And then, you know, around sort of 3 or 4, they're just starting to realize that they are this separate little person who has, you know, their own life in, or in this world.
You are, they say, egocentric until you're 7 to 9 years old, and then you start to really realize that you're a separate individual. You know, up to that point, you're just part of the world. You don't recognize yourself as having much form or perception of that, of yourself as an individual unit.
I just wanted to ask if you described what you'd seen to your mother in the window.
I don't remember. I was trying to point it out to her that something had happened, something amazing had happened. And I was real close with my mom because I lost my father early on. And so she was the person that, you know, I always tried to share anything with and tried to get understanding through her, her perceptions. She always had an open mind to this stuff. And I know that we've had some things happen that you know, miraculous. Can't think of anything offhand, but she was a very spiritual person, definitely. But I think that she struggled with the formal Christianity and all the trappings of religion instead of letting her heart and mind open up and you know, really, really see what's out there. But that was just an amazing, an amazing experience to see that face in the window and have no fear. You know, it was almost at that point, I'm thinking like a cartoon or something on the TV. You know, that was all I could correlate it to was, but of course, cartoons don't show up in your window at night. So I knew that something was different. And all I could ever think of was Jack Frost, the story of Jack Frost. And then probably that there are some historical experiences that Jack Frost actually came about from elementals painting frost on windows. I mean, is that a possibility?
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I have ever read any encounters that particularly relate to Jack Frost. I'm running through. I know that people have seen beings around Christmas and, you know, we have Father Christmas sightings or Santa Claus. And it sounds like you got eye contact with that being in the window.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It began with a kind of a staring contest. You know, I'm looking at him and he's looking at me. And then finally he smiled and you know, I smiled and then he looked inquisitive and backed away from the window and came back to the window. And, you know, I felt like he just wanted to communicate with me. And it was just an incredible experience.
Yeah, wow. So if you're about 4 or 5 at the time, can you relate that to anything that was happening in your life at the time around those times? I guess you're just starting school potentially, or I'm not sure how old you are when you start school over there.
Yeah, I don't know if I was actually in school at that point. I think that was when I was, that would have been a time when we had just arrived there, me and my mom. So she had just remarried, so it wasn't, I don't think I was in school, and I had never really seen snow before until, you know, she took me up there. So I had lived in Florida my whole life, and for my young life, and well, that's not true. I actually lived in Maryland and Virginia, but I think that was like my first experience with the real northern cold winter for any extended period of time. So maybe the weather had something to do with it, just the experience of that. And I don't know. It was, I think it was just pure chance. I think that this elemental was out and about on a cold, blustery night, and he maybe just wanted to get my attention. And that was I remember the window going boom, boom, like that. It was a wind was striking it, and then it was making kind of a drumming sound, like boom, boom. Yeah. And that woke me up. Yeah. So I don't know if I can correlate that to any aspect of my life, or I think that I think he just showed up and wanted to share something with me. You know, he looked at me and maybe looked through the window and saw me. But it's as real as as somebody walking through the door right now for me. I mean, that was absolute. It wasn't my imagination. Yeah. I mean, people, they want to say, well, that's your, you had maybe watched a Jack Frost cartoon and then you had this idea. But that, no way could I have imagined something that defined, that well defined, and experienced that out of pure imagination. The dream about the leprechaun, that was pretty abstract. But the fact that I fell into my bed, I'm certain that I had a full out of body experience, because I, they say when you get that. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but if you...
Oh, yeah, I've had those.
It's a sense of shock. It's not not a pleasant or anything, but you kind of go boom and you're back and here, and you know that you've returned from somewhere. You get a sense that you just came back. I guess a deep meditation can inspire that experience or facilitate it. But yeah, that was a really, really incredible creature to witness and to interact with.
And I mean, he appeared at the window, which of course is a threshold, and I'm just thinking about, as I say, this child meeting with nature, as you said, for perhaps the first time, not really having seen snow before or frost before. Had you already been playing in the snow? Had it already been snowing, or was this the first instance of frost? Oh, I don't suppose you can remember, really.
No, I can't. I remember being mystified the first time I saw snow. I thought it was sand. That's what I said to my mom. I said, why is there sand falling from the sky? I guess that's from being at the peak so often. I didn't know what it was. And we were living, that was kind of inner city. The houses were real close together. There weren't any places that you could go in the immediate area as a kid.
Yeah.
I don't remember any parks or anything like that. You had to drive to places. So I wasn't outside a lot at that point. I don't think, we spent much time outside.
So nature came to you, paid you a visit.
Yeah. We had a winter storm. I remember that. It was during a winter storm. So it was snowing hard. The wind was blowing, and woke up to this creature at the window. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know if it had any meaning, or for me personally, that this thing wanted to communicate with me specifically. It's entirely possible, but we'll never know these things. The mystery of having an experience like that is that you really just don't know.
No.
You'll never know. Maybe in another world I'll find out who he is. Communicate with him.
Well, I mean, if you're interested in hypnotism and hypnotic states, then you could potentially kind of go back to that moment, if it's not if you don't think it's going to be too upsetting for you. You'd have to make that decision wisely, wouldn't you? Do you remember what his face was like? And have you ever seen any pictures that you felt were similar to what he looked like? Assuming it was a he.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was no definite, I'm using the word he there, obviously. Just if you can imagine all of the typical and every image of a sprite, of a wood sprite, the face of a sprite, that's exactly what it was. Yeah. Whimsical, just maybe even mischievous look, and white, like pure white. And I can't remember if he had any eye color, but it appeared initially as a wispy thing, and I don't know if that was my perception of it, like a swirling orb, and I recognized that energy that I was experiencing at the window was a result of that orb, and then it formed into a face. And the face was very well defined. It was very distinct. No mistaking that for anything. And it was, kind of a what you see with a childlike, but yet you know that it isn't a child. The features of a child, but not young, not really young. And that's about the best I can do. I can't remember. I think that the outer edges of it remained kind of hazy. I can't remember if he had hair or no hat or anything like that. It was an energy being. I mean, it was formed of energy, and so it didn't have any other than the features. Any other distinguishable things that I can,
Sure, And I mean, you'd not long moved there by the sounds of things as well. So that's a pretty big transition for a child. I know I moved a few times when I was a kid, and I do remember those times quite vividly because, it's like your world shifts, doesn't it? Well, it's the same for anybody, whether you're a child or an adult, when you move home like that. So, and were you on the ground floor or the second floor or higher in your home?
It was a single story kind of a stick frame house, probably 900 square feet, small house.
Yeah.
I remember that. And there would have been considerable anxiety in my life. At that point, when you're 4 or 5 years old, making the world out, and then, there was some trauma in my early life, and, but I don't know that, that had any bearing on what happened or not. Can't possibly correlate my own life experience with what happened. But I do kind of feel like I had somehow attracted that creature as well. Time to renovate.
Time to renovate. What a beautiful memory to hold. Thanks again to our guest. I really love the idea that nature reaches out to us in this way. Our ancestors knew this and would turn to the land in times of need for solace and to unleash grief. As human beings, we were in touch with the seasons and knew the signs within nature as pointers for weather and for wisdom in growing cycles. Have a listen to this little piece called The Year's Round, which was collected in County Mayo, Ireland, in the 1930s as part of a national folklore project now called the Schools Collection, available on Dukas.ie.
Just a word about the music I'm going to use in parts of this episode. When you hear the otherworldly sounds, this is one of the songs from an album by Hood Fair. That's Hood, H-O-O-D, and then Fair, F-A-I-R-E. And it's called Environmental Meditation Music. And it was sent to me by a listener, Sam McLaughlin. They made it with a river harp, so it's kind of played sort of beneath the water. He told me that it's made purely with homemade instruments being played by the elements, wind, rain and rivers, and that they think of this project as a collaboration with nature spirits and a type of divination. It's really amazing. He's actually going to be coming on and talking to us about the way he makes his music. Thanks very much to Hood Fair for allowing me to use their music on this episode. And it is available to download on Bandcamp. Again, I will put the link on the show notes. The year contains four seasons, that is spring, summer, autumn and winter. In spring, all growing plants and living creatures awake from their long winter sleep. The birds exchange their homes and fly from the warm countries to this island. The homeland birds choose their mates and begin building their nests. The sun throws Jack Frost and Mr. Snow out of the saddle and plants his feet real tight in the stirrups. Every hedge bears a coat of tiny buds. Once more, the farmer makes his appearance in the fields with his horses and gets ready to sow his seeds. In summer, we have long, sunny, warm days and short, cool nights. The potato fields are laden with bright blue-purple blossoms. The yellow, red and bottle green gooseberries are to be seen in the land, and the yellow raspberries hang from the garden bushes. The sunny days of autumn change the colour of the corn to gold. The briars are hanging with blackberries. The swish of the scythe and the cracking sound of the reaper can be heard in the fields. The geese wander in the stubble fields, and the poultry pick up every stray grain. Mother makes jam, and I put an end to all the wasps and the bees I get in the kitchen. After autumn comes winter, the coldest season of the year. Mr. Frost and his father, the North Wind, throw the sun out of the saddle and make fun freezing lakes and every ditch. In this season, we have snow and sleet, and as a result of that, we have to put down big turf fires. The moon and stars glitter on the frosty roads. Spring comes hard on his heels, and the year's round begins again. I really love the detail here, and I can't help but feel sad that by and large our children no longer know those joys that the seasons bring when you live close to the land. The character Jack Frost is most familiar to us as this winter sprite that breathes across the land at night, bestowing powdery snow over the cold land, silvery trails across trees and houses, and sculpting intricate patterns at our windows, as he did in the encounter story that we heard here. But Jack Frost doesn't actually appear as a personification of winter in English folklore in his present form until 1734, where he is charged in a seasonal pamphlet round about our coal fire or Christmas entertainments with taking people by the nose at a cold and frosty time of year. Before this, it's very tricky to definitively find where the name Jack Frost arose from. Certainly the name Jack referred generically to any man during the 1500s and 1600s, and characters known as Jack often shone as the heroes in old folk tales such as Jack and the Beanstalk and Jack the Giant Killer, and in nursery rhymes as Jack Horner and Jack Sprat. The name Jack Frost is widely thought to have derived from a Jockle Frosty character, but there doesn't appear to be any original references to a personification of this name. Though there are mentions of two beings, Jockle, which means glacier or icicle, and Frosty, which means frost, in Scandinavian mythology. They are sons of the Lord of Winds, Kari. I do find it interesting that in The Year's Round, the poem, Mr. Frost is the son of the North Wind, so that kind of harks back to this idea of Jockle, icicle, and Frosty, frost, being the sons of Kari, the Lord of the Winds. So there's obviously something carried over there in tradition and folklore. These beings are perhaps more of a colder, darker figure than Jack Frost. I'm also reminded of the kind of vibe of the character of the Snow Queen. And like many of the Victorian fairy tales of the time, when it was published, she is a dark fairy seductress of men and abductor of children, nodding to the fact that many are taken in the cold of winter. What I did find interesting is there is a reference to a Frosty the Dwarf in Skald Skaparmal, the poetic second part of an Old Norse textbook known as Edda or Prose Edda, possibly from the early 13th century, and is thought to be written by Snorri, an Icelandic poet and hero. And Frosty is mentioned in Völuspá, considered a noble poetic work, also within the Edda, by a female seeress or prophetess called Vola. Apologies for mispronunciations. The earliest manuscripts depicting that poem are the late 13th century. In Finland, Pakakuko is Frostman and Pakuspoika is Frostboy, and they ruled the weather. Wintertime was, and still is for some, a dark, merciless season. Snow blizzards that would undoubtedly bring death to people and their animals, and of course, as I said above, would spoil their crops. So communities would leave offerings of porridge for winter deities in the hope that they would spare them and their reindeer through the winter. As well as winter being dangerous, the deep freeze was also thought to play an important role in killing germs, and this is how Jack Frost was represented by Thomas Nast in an illustration for Harper's Weekly in 1861. In this illustration, he is a hero on horseback covered in icicles, and he's seen saving the American Civil War soldiers by wiping out the deathly cholera which ran rampant through the troops. And Jack had appeared in a poem by Hannah Flagg Gould just 30 years before in 1832. Then he flew to the mountain and powdered its crest. He lit on the trees and their boughs he dressed. In diamond beads and over the breast of the quivering lake he spread. A coat of mail that it need not fear, the downward point of many a spear that hung on its margin far and near, where a rock could rear its head. He went to the windows of those who slept, and over each pane like a fairy crept, wherever he breathed, wherever he slept, by the light of the moon were seen most beautiful things. There were flowers and trees, there were bevies of birds and swarms of bees. There were cities with temples and towers, and these all pictured in silver sheen. But he did one thing that was hardly fair. He peeped in the cupboard and finding there that all had forgotten for him to prepare. Now, just to set them a-thinking, I'll bite this basket of fruit, said he. This costly pitcher I'll burst in three, and the glass of water they've left for me shall chick to tell them I'm drinking. In another poem in 1875 by John L. Shorey, he's presented as a roguish character who will nip children on the nose, bite their toes, and pull them by the ears. He's only sent away by a good hot fire. In 1902, L. Frank Baum, who also wrote The Wizard of Oz, wrote Jack into The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus, which was made into a stop-motion animation film in 1985. I put the link to that in the show notes. This mischievous son of the Frost King declares to Santa Claus, "There will be a rare sport for me tonight, Claus. Isn't this glorious weather? I shall nip scores of noses and ears and toes before daybreak." Before Santa Claus implores him to spare the young and vulnerable. Jack Frost has, of course, appeared as a character in the Marvel comics of the 1940s and subsequent films thereto. If you'd like a further deep delve into the folkloric roots of this character, Jack Frost, I would highly recommend listening to an excellent podcast episode by Jim Moon, who did a brilliant job of researching this on his Hypnagoria podcast in 2017. The episode is In Search of Jack Frost, and I've also put that link in the show notes. So I'm just going to share with you a few experiences from the fairy investigation census. And this is from the new census, of course, that was released very recently. So please go and check that out. I will also leave the link to that on the show notes. And congratulations to Simon Young for, again, coming up with just such an amazing collection and, you know, such great effort on his part to collect these encounters. And this is number 559. It was a little girl in the 1970s, age 10 or under, in Liverpool. I must have been 4 or 5. My parents had separated for a while, and my mum and I had gone back to live in my grandparents' house, which was a weird house anyway, but that's a separate story. My mum and I were sharing one of the front bedrooms. For some reason, there were no curtains up in that room. I awoke one night, and from where I was lying in bed, I could see the sky, which I remember had a really deep red cast to it. There were lots of clouds, and it must have been pretty windy out because the clouds were scudding across the sky pretty quickly. I remember lying there watching that for a minute or two and listening to my mum murmur in her sleep, when suddenly I became aware of a small figure stood on the windowsill. He must have been about 12 inches tall and was totally transparent. All I could see was a glowing golden outline. He appeared to be dressed in a traditional little elf-style hat, a jacket, even his patch pocket on the front of his jacket was outlined, trousers, and little shoes with turned up toes, but all of this was just highlighted in a glowing golden outline. He seemed aware that I had awoken, but he was running up and down the length of the windowsill, looking out of the window as though he were looking for someone or something. He kept putting his hand up as though to shield his eyes from the light. He seemed quite excited. I remember lying there utterly spellbound, but desperate for my mum to see him as well, but I was very certain that if he knew I was awake, he'd disappear. So I tried to whisper, calling for my mum to wake up, which of course she didn't, so I gave up after a couple of attempts and just watched him. I assume I fell back to sleep afterwards. I know I wasn't dreaming, which is what people tell me I must have been if I ever tell them about my encounter, but I'm convinced I saw him. I'm also rather desperate to read all your other sightings, as I've wanted to find another sighting like mine ever since. That's something we all share, yearning to speak to each other about our experiences. This one, 687, is a female in California in the 1990s and again under the age of 10. I lost my tooth when I was around 5 and was expecting to see fairies that night. It was around 10 and I stayed awake as my mother fell asleep. We shared the same bed. Suddenly, a transparent fairy was waving at me through my window. She had a star wand, I remember. And then 2 more came. Then the whole room was full. They all looked different. They were on the floor near my bed and 2 or 3 chose to look at me from above. I didn't move or say anything. I just stared. All I could see was their outline, and it wasn't white, it was transparent and glimmering. They didn't speak. I then fell asleep. My father believed me, my mother didn't, but I know what I saw. I never had any imaginary friends or hallucinations. I was wide awake. This one is number 746B, and it's from Illinois. Again, it's a little girl under the age of 10 in the 2000s. I actually have a few experiences from my childhood. I have believed heavily in fairies my entire life and have always had a fascination with them. Most of the experiences I've had are from when I was about 6 years old. For a few years, around the ages of 6 to 9, I'd go on about a fae that would watch me through my bedroom window at night, and I'd draw tons of pictures of her and tell my mum and friends about it. I don't often see them full on, but to this day I believe I can catch glimpses of them and magic all around me, and I'm always aware if they're near, even if I can't see them. This one is number 749C, and it is from Iowa. When I was youngish, maybe 10 or 12, I was alerted by a rustling sound at my windows. Upstairs bedroom, a little odd. I turned around to see that it was simply dried autumn leaves, maybe 100 or so, blowing in the wind. It was a bit of a spectacle, so I looked more closely and was quite shocked to see that maybe 40 of them were, in fact, not leaves at all, but pixies, your typical Victorian variety, with wings and clothes that appeared to be made of dried autumn leaves themselves. One of them, a boy, I recall, put his wee face up against the glass and shielded his eyes to have a better look at me. I was delighted and alarmed at the sight, especially since my journey of belief had started with strict scientific atheism and had more gradually broadened to include more and more things over my childhood and young adult years. It may seem funny and backwards to some, but at 4 years old, you could not tell me anything magical had ever existed. By 21, I was a practicing witch. Now, this one is also making me think of the previous episode, The Green Gnome Visitation Changed My Life, that is episode 73, where the green gnome appears at the window of this little boy and then comes into his bedroom, and he describes that being as having clothes that are made of things like leaves and parts of the earth. So that's quite a nice indication. Now, this last little one I wanted to share with you is also from the Dukas, i.e. One night, a certain man was in bed, and he was not long in it when he heard a rap on the window. He got up and went to the window. It was a nyack that was at the window. The nyack told the man that there was a pot or two of gold buried under a bush in near the wall in St. Patrick Shiel's rock. In the morning, the man set off to the rock with his spade. There were a lot of bushes near that wall, and he did not know which bush to dig under. He was standing near the wall, and what did he see? But the nyack coming towards him. When the nyack came near him, he told the man to guess which bush the gold was hidden under. The man guessed the wrong bush. The nyack disappeared, and the man went home very sad. Now, the nyack is a white, a type of fairy being or otherworldly being. I hope you've enjoyed this episode and that you feel ready to embrace our descent into the darkness. I think that these stories, folklore, poems and encounters all remind us that we have this innate relationship with nature that can enrich our lives if we allow it to. We must, of course, approach the seasons with respect, as we've learned, because the elements are something, hopefully it will always be this way, that we will never wield power over. Remember that you do hold the power to love more, so let's spread more of that. And again, think of ways that we want to experience life in this world for all of us. Hold on to that, hold that vision. I think a big key there is remembering how we once were. Much love to you. Keep warm, know you are loved, and always remain curious.